Session number 16720, Mr. Bob Wilson, reel 2.
Reel 2. How did you take to the discipline side of the boys' brigade?
Easy. I was always told to do as I was told as a boy. Not nastily, but my mother used to say, if you do as you're told, you'll never be in trouble. And life's a lot easier when you do as you're told. So, although the discipline was a bit more stricter in the house than the boys' brigade, I didn't find any problems at all. Nor did I find the army any problems later on. Could be because I expected it.
Did you have drills and parades in the boys' brigade?
Oh, yes. Countermarching in a place called Thompson's Memorial Hall in Dundas Street, Sunderland. So we used to attend there on a Thursday night, inspected for our belts and our bandoliers, and our hat had to be on properly, our jersey had to be, clean. And then we used to do just counter-marching, and we used to do, teach in map reading and things like that, because we didn't understand it really. But it was past the 2 hours away, and it was a 2 hours enjoyable evening.
One evening a week?
One day a week. And then every once a month, you went for church parade. And they used to pick, the churches. So you went to a different church, but of your own religion sort of thing, you see. And you weren't forced to go. I mean, if they went to a CV church, and you didn't want to go, well, that was fair enough. You didn't go.
Did you have your own band?
Well, we all had bugles, yes, and the old kettle drum. That was it.
It must have been a good grounding for going into the forces afterwards.
Marvellous ground, yeah. My mother wanted me to go in the Navy, you know. But it never materialised. I don't know. Of course, my dad was, as I told you before, was a chief steward, and he was in the sort of merchant Navy, you see. Got some lovely references and of my dad's that I'll show you later on if you want to see them. Lovely it was.
Yeah. How old were you when you were in the boys' brigade? What age was it?
Oh, 15, 16. I came out the boys' brigade when I went down the pit. See, because there was different shifts, therefore I wasn't getting to the meetings. See.
The last time we were talking about the pit was you were on the top with the stone coming out.
Coming out the top, on the landing, you mean, yeah?
What was your next job after that?
Well, the next job was that was where you went towards the stone putting. That's the next job. And that's the job that you got paid by the number of tubs you took out, you see. So the harder you worked, the more money you got.
How old would you be when you went into that part of the job?
About 19.
Did you go further into other work in the pit after the stone work?
Well, as I told you, my Uncle Harry was a foreman. And although we never saw eye to eye, all he was doing, I know, all he was doing was for my welfare. And he said to me I told you about the noise, Lord, and I must tell you this, I got more fines off my Uncle Harry than anybody else. And I always got fined half a crown, and that was a lot of money, and I couldn't afford it, but I still got fined.
What kind of things did you get fined
for? Doing things I shouldn't do.
Such as?
Well, I told you about this train that goes out from the shaft, you see. Well, suppose I was playing football at night time, which we did those days in the summer nights, I used to jump and used to get in between the tubs, crouch down and got lift out, you know, for about 3 miles, you see. And it used to save you a quarter of an hour. I mean, I always used to do that when I played football. And you never used to see me, you never used to stop us, you know. I used to be on the... well, Robert Wilson would report to 401's office, you know. And that's how I used to go on to him and say, what have I done now? Well, he used to say, well, what's up? Is it low down, but he's a son. I saw him in between the tubes last night. Well, I never saw him, you know. Never saw him. But he used to shield his lamp, you see. Just stand in the refuge hole, which is dug into the side of things, so people got in there when the train went past, you know. Stand there, and he used to shield his lamp, you see. And of course, he used to see you see.
And this was to get out quickly so you could get to football.
Get washed, get, you know, and get the football gear on the way down. Wherever we were playing, because we played at sea, you see. But those days, that was no problem.
Did you get on to putting the coal itself whilst you were in the pits?
I didn't go coal putting. No, I didn't go coal putting. I went on to, you know, I couldn't remember me telling you about the winning side of it. I went to that side of the gun. The chap I was working for, cleaning all the stone there, was one of the chaps, you know, that goes through loads of rock and loads of rock, you know, and they come to the coal face, and he said, hey, do you fancy the job? Because I'll take you on. Because there was always two of them, you know, and one of them was retiring. I said, well, that was more money still, you see. Hard work, but more money.
At what stage did you decide to leave the pit?
Well, now that, as I told Uncle Harry, was a big influence in my down the pit. And he came to our house one day and he said, Jane, that's what we call him, mother, his sister, I want old Bobby, he always called old Bobby, to go to night school and study for a deputy's ticket. I was only 20 years old then, you know. So my mother said, oh, what do you think? I said, well, if I'm going to stop down the pit, I might as well. I said, because it's more money and it's... So I went to school, and it was at Riot Grammar School, where the course was being held. And I did the written test and passed it. I mean, it blew me on to them, hands down. Pretty good marks I did. And of course, once I passed that, I thought it was on the books, you see. And the Uncle Harry came in and said to us, he sent for us, like, and he said, you've done very, very well. He said, now all you've got to do now is just wait and take notice. So somewhere on the loft there, as I've said in the book here, my certificate's there, my deputy certificate's there. The oral part, you know, that part of it. So, goodness knows what would have happened if I stopped in the pit. How far I would have gone.
What decided you then to come out?
I had a row with Uncle Larry. A blazing row with him. My name was on the board, you see. And he said to me, I went to the office, he said, I've sent for you. According to the lamp cabin, you came out of the pit a half an hour before your shift was finished. Well, I know I did. Because we were playing away at Darlington in a cup tie. And of course, we had to catch the train those days, or the bus, you know, but it was always the train. So I went half an hour. He said, there'd be no problem whatsoever if you went to the deputy, or if you went to the overman, or even if you'd come to me and asked for permission to ride, you know, leave half an hour early, you'd have got it. But no, you did it on your own free will, you know. So I had a blazing row with him. And I walked out, and I walked to Blandford Street and joined the army on my 21st birthday.
And you'd had no thoughts of joining the army at all?
No, far away. No, never. No. I like pit work.
Who did you play football for?
Fulham, the Chapel, and then later on Fulham Athletic. Chapel first and the Athletic later on. The Athletic was in the big boys' leagues, as we called it. Yeah.
So after your row, you went straight down to the recruitment office?
Yeah, down there, from the pit to Blunter Street and joined the army and told my mother. And my Uncle Harry came up like and said, what's the matter? And my mother said, well, he's joined the army and they want to buy us out straight away. Then before I went to Fenerbahce. And I said, no. Pig at it, really. Pig at it. I said, no. I said, it's just very nice for me. Well, you know, it's my fault, you see, if you think about it. I was the one in trouble. I was the one that did wrong, not nobody else, just me. But that was the sort of bit. And I think I rue it to this day, I think. Nothing against the army, but I think I rue it to this day.
Was your mother upset that you joined in that way?
Oh, my mother? Oh, yes. Yeah, she was upset. She was more upset when I joined the army.
To go to the recruiting office, how did you join? How did you sign on?
Well, I just went there, you know, and walked up the stairs, Blumper Street. It was not these posh places I have now, you know. It was a ropey office upstairs, you know. I've come to join the army. All right. How old are you? 21. Have you been in the tea or anything? No. Sign here. You go to Fleming Barracks, have a medical, and if we pass you, you're all right. That was it.
What date was this?
My birthday, the 20th of April, 1933.
So you signed a piece of paper to say you were now in the forces.
And I got a warrant to go to Newcastle.
Did they ask you about which regiment you wanted to join? Or?
Oh, yes. Well, I already knew one regiment, didn't I? Yeah. I didn't know no Gloucesters or East Yorks or West Yorks. I said, yeah, General Infantry. Yeah. Right on.
Did you know anyone, any friend or pal that was already in the regiment?
No. Nobody.
You just knew of the regiment?
Yeah. I think if the Foreign Legion had been stationed, I would probably join that, you see. I was in that mood. And I did rue it later on, you know, when I sat down and thought about it. When I got to Fenham Barracks and was in the army, I think that's when I sat down and said, you stupid, you are stupid. But my mother and my uncle had it tried for a good month to buy us out. Because you were allowed 6 weeks those days, you know, buy us out.
When you got to Fenham Barracks, how did they receive you?
As if I was a criminal. The first thing that happened when I got to the Fenham Barracks, I walked through the door and a corporal, which I found out was a corporal later on, shouted out, and where do you think you're going? That was the guard corporal, see? I said, I'm in, joined the army. Because I didn't know whether to say corporal or not. She said, come here. He said, with these two stripes on here, the way they went, I'm a corporal. Now, this is for your own good. If you see anybody with three stripes on, you call them sergeant. Anybody with two stripes on, you call them corporal. Anybody with one stripe, you call them corporal. If they have a crown, you call them sir. And if they have pips up here, or crowns up here, or whatever, you call them sir. But you salute them. But you don't salute anybody else. And he spoke, after the first initial shouting and bawling at us, he spoke very good. And so he said, right. And he shouted to one of the guards, I wasn't the only one there, there were five of us. Take them up to Ladysmith Squad and report to Sergeant Ross. So I went up there, and we went into the barrack, and they cried me out the first night. I let them as hard as anybody. Walked into the barrack room. No sooner than the barrack room, the lance corporal there, because he slept in the barrack room. He started bawling and shouting, you know. I'd never been shouted at in my life. And I think, if he hadn't shut up, I think I had a clock to one, I think. That was a nasty piece of work, this Lance Corporal work, nasty piece of work. But he was only doing his job. That's what he was there for. Downstairs, he says, and then we went to get three palliasses. Have you seen them? You know, three little mattresses together. That, the blankets, and horrible sheets, pillowcases and pillows, up there, make your bed, and he showed us how to make your bed. Well, one of them did. Show us how to make a bed, in the morning, fold it up and put it ready for inspection. At night time came there, and I was sitting next to a chap, and I said, well, this is any good, is it? He said, what do we do now? He said, well, we can go to the Naffy and get a cup of tea. I said, let's wear. I only had, about 1 threepence, I think. Well, of course, you got a cup of tea for a penny in those days. So went to Naffy and stopped there and came back and of course, we're sitting in our beds talking, and all of a sudden, the bugle went and it was lights out. And there's no hesitation, you know. Your light had to be out in the barrack room before the bugle finished.
What time would this be at night?
10 o'clock.
Had you been issued with any uniform on this first
no,
day?
No, not yet. No. We're still in our cities, really. So I got undressed and gone to bed, and I think I could have cried, you know. And I could still have got out if my pride hadn't got, you know. So, but there you are, that's it. So, and the next day, up to 6 o'clock, you know. And of course Lance Corporal Welch was in the barrack and he comes shouting out of bed, and if he weren't out of bed they tipped the bed up, you know. And the Corporal Gray came in, he was shooting a little thing out. He came and started shouting, and Sergeant Ross came in, he started shouting downstairs, or clavered downstairs in our civvies. Formed up outside. Well, we had no idea to drill them. Had a little bit of idea for the boys' brigade, which came in handy. And then he marched us to quartermaster stores. And we got issued with denims. And of course, our uniform, but then they had to go to the tailors because that had to be altered, you know.
What uniform were we actually given?
We were given a jacket, a hat. See, it was it was no buddies those days, you know. Trousers, putties, boots, underpants, vests. You know, three vests, three underpants. Your army kit and your what did they call them? Not denims. Anyway, well, that's what. And you got two sets of lens, so there was one in and one to watch, sort of thing. And signed for them.
And how did they work out your size?
Well, that's. Well, they give a rough idea of your size, you see. Because everything had to be altered, didn't it? And of course, you marched down. The first day was getting the uniform, marching down to the tailors, getting measured. Handing the uniform in, and you got a chitty back, and of course they chopped the bottoms off and sewed them up, you see. And 2 days you had all your gear back into your locker.
And this was a locker beside your bed?
Aye, above your bed.
Had you been issued with any weapon on this first day?
Not yet. No.
And you'd have your badges and...
Colour badges, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spent. That's what he said to us. Have you got any Brasso or Mepo? No, Corporal. Well, go to the canteen and buy some. Mm-hmm. And I remember one lad saying, Ainsley, they called him. But I've got no money, Corporal. Right, he said, come here. He went to his bed. And he signed a little chitty. I'm giving you 2 shillings. Now, when you get paid at the weekend, you bring that 2 shillings back, and I'll give you the chitty. He was lending you 2 shillings, but he had to cover himself, you know. So that's how it works. Buy your own nepal, your own cloths, you see. Blanco. That was a farce, the first one, Blanco. But never mind.
Did it teach you in any way how to keep your equipment and your uniform clean?
Oh, you got demonstrations. Oh, yes. The first week was all demonstration of how to blanco, how to clean, how to put your things away, how to hang them up so they didn't get dirty. So when you blanco'd them at night time and you've polished your brushes, you could hang them up and they were ready to put on in the morning. Oh, you got all them. The first week was all that sort of thing, showing you what to do, how to do it, and then you have to do it in front of them and see how you're getting on.
Can we concentrate on the room that you were living in now, the barrack block? Can you describe what it looked like?
Yeah. It was a long room with about 12 beds on each side. About 12 beds on each side. Maybe more. How wide? 5 yards, 15. No. About 6 yards. So you've got your two beds down there, and the thing through the centre. And in the middle of the, down the centre, there's a great big stove with a pipe going up in it. And that was your central heating. And that had to be kept clean as well, you know. And that was your one, you had to sort of muck in and do that sort of, you know, clean that in the morning, empty it. And set it, you weren't allowed to light it. Did they finish parades? Right?
How did you keep it clean? What did you use?
The stove, black lead. They supplied that, man. Black lead, yeah. It's like the houses those days, you know, they had a black lead stove. It's just a similar thing.
Yeah. And that was inspected every day?
Wasn't inspected, but looked at. And wore betide. Yeah. There was a chap who used to that was the room orderly, and everybody used to take a turn, you see. And it's a sort of, you were in the room all day, but you did the stove, and you did the dust around the window ledges and things like that, you see. And you swept up. What was your job? It was only one day, you know. So you did about once a month.
What was burnt in the stove? What was burnt in the stove?
Oh, coke and coal. It all depends what sort of stove it was. They had some stoves that burned coke and some that burned coal. Or wood, anything, to keep warm. Yeah.
And where was that kept?
That was kept just outside the landing door in, like, alcove, which was a coal house. And then you brought it in the scuttle at night time, or filled it up and took your scuttle back again out the door. So there was only the stove there and a poker.
So you have a stove for heating. What else was in the room? Was there a table of any kind?
There's just a table in the centre. Table in the centre and four chairs.
How did you work on that, keeping that clean?
Oh, yes.
How was that done?
That was scrubbed, hand scrubbed that. And when we got the know-how, you know, later on when we got down to the town, we got know-how about table. Just to see, you know, a butcher's block, the dry scrubber. Well, we used to get one of them and say, that used to bring it up lovely.
The floor, how did you keep the floor clean?
Bumper. There's always Mansion Polish, as we call it, and you bummed it. That was the orderly's job. And I told you about the man left behind. When everybody went out on parade, he used to get the old bumper going.
So the room had to be kept spotlessly
clean?
The
room had to be ready for inspection by anybody an hour after the lads had left the on parade. Sort of an hour. And the main thing, of course, all the beds were made and everything, and everything was tidy. But, yeah, I still had the bumping to do and tidy away.
What was the routine of keeping your bed in a way that they liked?
What was the...
How did you do it? How did you put your beds
well,
up?
Well, first of all, you put your three little palliasses, about that square, on top of each other. And your blankets were folded so that interwove into the palliasses, you see. And then your sheets were folded properly so they're in between your palliasses. So it was like a blanket, a sheet. But there was only the one blanket, you see. And then on the top of that was your cup, you know, your mug. Your mug and your knife, fork and spoon.
How often was your uniform and equipment inspected? And was that laid out in a special way?
Just hung up behind your bed, you see. If you weren't using your belt and everything, it was hung up beside the side of your bed. And of course, by then, your number was on your belt, wasn't it?
Kit inspections, were they pretty frequent?
They came later on, but it was once a month. Once a month. Even at the depot, it was once a month. And the reason the kit inspection used to check, see if you'd left any kit. And if you had, well, you went to the quartermaster store and got it replaced, but paid for it.
That was the barrack room you lived in. Where were the toilets and the washing facilities?
Well, the toilet and washing facility was downstairs, about maybe wash, like a... How would you put it? How would you get it? Loads of taps and loads, you know, and you washed under a running tap, that's all there was.
No hot water?
Oh, yes, warm water, yeah.
The toiletry, where was that?
The toilet downstairs.
Mm-hmm. And these would have to be kept clean?
Oh, yes.
Whose job was that?
At the depot, they had depot staff, and that was their job. At the depot.
Within the room itself, and you were in, how many men would be sleeping in that room?
30.
Mm-hmm. Was there any bullying or initiation ceremonies, anything like that?
Well, those days, you know, if there was any bullying, you know, they used to, Lance Clark used to say, right, you know, it's just where, Wilson, you're a bully. Picking on the younger lads. And this is true, what I'm going to tell you about. And he used to say to the lads, who do you want to represent you? And you know, you'd pick a curvy. You should go down to the gym then and sort it out. That was what they did those days. And there was nothing wrong with it, you know. Stopped a lot of it. Somebody had to be found, you know, to get out of it, you know. And what you're doing, and then that was very good. I think I believe in it anyway.
So the bully had to go down and fight someone that you'd selected.
Oh yeah, it didn't matter who it was. It could be everywhere. It could have been Frank Bruno. And the object was to give him be bullied. That was the idea of it.
Was there much bullying?
No. Because. Funny enough, everybody was pals, you know, really. Marvellous, Esprit de Corps, you know, in the army. Marvellous. And whenever you were getting ready for parade, this will come later, of course, but whenever you were getting ready for parade, everybody helped you to get ready. If you're on guard or things like that, you know, somebody always used to be sitting around and doing your belt while somebody was doing one boot, somebody was doing the other boot, you know, things like that. Marvellous. I don't know whether it happens now.
What was the background of most of the men with you in that unit?
Most of them come from mining, most of them. I would say 75% mining.